CD 6.
The History Monks had done their job well, but their biggest ally was the human ability to think narratively. And humans had risen to the occasion. They'd say things like, "Thursday already? What happened to the week?" And, "Time seems to go a lot faster these days." And, "It seems like only yesterday." But some things remained. The monks had carefully wiped out the time when the glass clock had struck. It had been surgically removed from history. Almost. Susan picked up Grimm fairy tales again. Her parents hadn't bought her books like this when she was a child. They'd tried to bring her up normally. They knew that it is not entirely a good idea for humans to be too close to death. They taught her that facts were more important than fancy. And then she'd grown up and found that the real fantasies weren't the Pale Rider or the Tooth Fairy or bogeymen. They were all solid facts. The big fantasy was that the world was the place where the toast didn't care if it came butterside down or not, where logic was sensible, and where things could be made not to have happened. Something like the glass clock had been too big to hide. It had leaked out via the dark, hidden labyrinths of the human mind and had become a folk tale. People had tried to coat it with sugar and magic swords, but its true nature still lurked like a rake in an overgrown lawn, ready to rise up at the incautious foot. Now someone was treading on it again, and the point, the key point, was that the chin it was rising to meet belonged to someone like me. She sat and stared at nothing for a while. Around her, historians climbed library ladders, fumbled books onto their lecterns, and generally rebuilt the image of the past to suit the eyesight of today. One of them was, in fact, looking for his glasses. Time had a son, she thought. Someone who walks in the world. There was a man who devoted himself to the study of time so wholeheartedly that, for him, time became real. He learned the ways of time, and time noticed him, Death had said. There was something there, like love. And time had a son. How? Susan had the kind of mind that would sour a narrative with a question like that. Time and a mortal man. How could they ever... Well, how could they? Then she thought, my grandfather is Death. He adopted my mother. My father was his apprentice for a while. That's all that happened. They were both human, and I turned up in the normal way. There is no way I should be able to walk through walls and live outside time and be a little bit immortal, but I am, and so this is not an area where logic and, let's face it, basic biology have any part to play. In any case, time is constantly creating the future. The future contains things that didn't exist in the past. A small baby should be easy for something, someone, that rebuilds the universe once every instant. Susan sighed. And you had to remember that time probably wasn't time, in the same way that death wasn't exactly the same as death, and war wasn't exactly the same as war. She'd met War, a big fat man with an inappropriate sense of humour and a habit of repeating himself, and he certainly didn't personally attend every minor fracas. She disliked Pestilence, who gave her funny looks, and Famine was just wasted and weird. None of them ran their, call it their discipline, they personified it. Given that she'd met the Tooth Fairy, the Soul Cake Duck and Old Man Trouble, it amazed Susan that she'd grown up to be mostly human, nearly normal. As she stared at her notes, her hair unwound itself from its tight bun and took up its ground state position, which was that of someone who had just touched something highly electrical. It spread out around her head like a cloud, with one black streak of nearly normal hair. Grandfather might be an ultimate destroyer of worlds and the final truth of the universe, but that wasn't to say he didn't take an interest in the little people. Perhaps time did, too. She smiled. Time waited for no man, they said. Perhaps she'd waited for one once. Susan was aware that someone was looking at her, turned and saw the Death of Rats peering through the lens of the glasses belonging to the mildly distracted man, searching for them on the other side of the room. Up on a long-disregarded bust of a former historian, the raven preened itself. "Well," she said. "Squeak!" "Oh, he is he?" The doors of the library were nuzzled open, and a white horse walked in. There is a terrible habit amongst horsey people to call a white horse grey, but even one of that bow-legged fraternity would have had to admit that this horse, at least, was white. Not as white as snow, which is a dead white, but at least as white as milk, which is alive. His bridle and reins were black, and so was the saddle, but all of them were in a sense just for show.